Oh, that's right. We're right here this afternoon, and I have a very special guest. One of my favorite people to sit down and talk to is sitting across from me at the table here today, and it is Mike Pitts, Representative Mike Pitts. How you doing today, Mike?
I'm well. I hope you are.
I am. I hope I'm up to the challenge of all the things that are going on that we need to discuss here, Mike.
What things?
What things? I know, it's a lovely day in the neighborhood, right?
Yeah, it's if you look at Columbia right now, it's rosy. I took my cue from Obama on his exit. Everything is great. The economy is great. The world is calm and safe. And that's the approach I decided to take to Columbia this year. Everything's great.
Everything's great. Wow. Well, then I guess all these notes I have about the pension plan, the roads falling apart, whether we're going to have medical marijuana, are we going to have reciprocity agreements on concealed weapons? I mean, you know, those are just a few of the things that are out there, Mike.
There are a ton of them.
Yeah.
Yes, there are.
And, you know, for you, what do you see as the biggest issue facing our state?
The biggest issue facing our state at this point? Mm-hmm. It would have to be the pension system and the unfunded liability that comes with it.
Well, you know, I had Treasurer Curtis Loftus on. One of the things I got out of the whole conversation was the fact that if they should have to close the pension system to future people going in it, the effect would be very bad for cities and counties because they would have to come up with more money to pay the teachers and the people that are in the pension system.
It would be a double hit, Ann. It would hit them, and you're right, if you closed it to new people, you would have that situation. You would also exacerbate the problem in the current pension system because it for better or worse, the similarities are to the Social Security system. The new people coming in have to help support it at this point.
So therefore, the answer would be just have a bunch of new employees?
Well, that would be good, except your taxes would go up to pay that influx of new employees. That was something Curtis and I talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Or we could all become state employees. How about that?
But somebody's got to pay the taxes then.
Darn, I hate when that happens. I thought maybe we would be able to work around this program. So what is the bottom line on the pension system? I noticed in the budget you've put $150 million aside. I understand the pension problem is a $24 billion problem.
It's a $24 billion problem if you're looking at the total unfunded liability. The unfunded liability should not be out past 70%, so you'd look at 70% of that.
Of $24 billion?
That's correct.
Okay. So that's 24.
Well, you'd actually
12,
be looking.
15.
You would actually be looking at 30% of that.
30%.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what does this $150 million do?
It gets us over the hump on interest on on what's owed out there.
Okay. Does it solve it?
Pardon?
Does it solve it?
Is it solvent?
Will it solve it? If
no,
the 150?
No, it will not. But it is a first step in that direction. And yes, it can be solved. Can the pension system be saved? Yes, it can. But it can't if the can is kicked down the road one more time. And that's the conversation I had with Curtis. I don't believe shutting the pension system to new employees is the correct answer at this point. If you wanted to do what the pension system was designed to do, which was state employees, you can say what is, what was, and what should have been. The pension system should have never been expanded to allow other people into the state's pension system. And then the problem would not be as great as it is today. And you remember, you and I talked a little bit last year about the growth pattern of the state and the aging population of our state. And the amount of retirees, a million new people moving into the state, which are mostly retirees. When you look at the two ways that the state gains resource, one is the payroll tax, and one is the sales tax. The payroll tax, although people scream, some people scream about it. Nikki Haley used to beat it to death. Ours is not very high in the grand scheme of things.
Correct.
But the number of people employed in this state, percentage-wise, is less than it was a decade ago because we have a retirement-eligible society.
Well, so that's why we need more state employees then, right, Mike?
More state employees would pay into the system and help make it solvent. The flip side of that is the taxpayer has to pay for those state employees. And in some areas, we do need more state employees. If you're looking at law enforcement, we do need more state employees. We need more law enforcement people out there. Our society, as you and I discussed again last year, is not what it once was, and it does not seem to be getting better post-November elections.
Yes, we've got more law enforcement. We need more judges. We need more solicitors. I mean, that whole side of things.
That is core function of government and what we should be doing. But we get lost in an equation called medical and our health care and education.
Well, isn't education, is education a core function of the of
education
ourselves?
Is a core function. Okay. But what is education? My definition of core function education, and a lot of other people's definition vary on that. If you go back to my first grade teacher, I had this discussion with some folks over in Lawrence last week because they're wanting to do a $109 million bond bill over there to build a new high school. Without very much good information. But my first grade teacher had 36 students.
Okay.
She had no aide. And most of the people, I looked at my old yearbook, my first grade class, and most of those guys and gals in that class were pretty successful people. I may be on the bottom end of the scale of that crowd, but most of them did very well.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying that there's a lot of things involved in education today that I don't really think provide the core function of education. I'll give you an example very quickly, Ann. In this discussion with of the bond bill with the new superintendent in Lawrence District 55, he wants to consolidate five middle schools into one and put them in the old high school and build a new high school. And I said, so how does that affect personnel? And he said, there will be no change in personnel. And I said, you have five schools. So you have five principals. Are you going to have five principals at one school?
Right.
No, we're going to have one principal and four assistant principals at that school. Nobody will lose their job. Now, I've discussed this with Jim Furman. I've discussed it with Bill Baldwin. I've discussed it with other folks in the business arena. And from AT&T down, I don't know any corporation
that consolidates
and expands or keeps the same level of employees.
Sure. Well, that's the purpose usually, isn't it? To become leaner.
And more efficient.
Do more with less.
But my point to that is that's the mindset of a lot in education, and it can become top heavy very quickly.
Well, I remember seeing a bill first part of January about the money that all the schools wanted to expand new buildings. I mean, I have no problem with repairing those that need repair that have been let go. But there's a lot of new building that they want in that education part of the bill.
And that's true in most aspects. We need to be taking care of what we've got, whether it's roads, whether it's buildings, and not necessarily building new at this point.
Correct.
We need to be, people talk about deferred maintenance. Deferred maintenance is just another way of saying we put it off.
Exactly, exactly.
And it goes back to, like you and I were talking earlier, pay me now or pay me later.
Or pay me more later. Yeah, there you go.
Pay me less now, pay me more later. That was a good adage you came up with, and it's true. The longer you wait on maintenance, the more it costs in the long run.
I remember reading an article in The State about how the roof is leaking in with some of the buildings and the elevator doesn't work. I don't remember what building it was, but it was an article in The State. And they were talking about that these buildings need maintenance, and yet they want to build new buildings and expand. So I don't know where that stands at this point.
We need to repair. Over 70% of our buildings need major repairs at this point. I'm talking about National Guard armories. I'm talking about from National Guard armories all the way to the buildings on the State House complex. The Calhoun building, for instance, has some major repairs going on. Had they been done a decade ago, it would have been a much less costly effort.
Is it the fact that we don't take in enough money, or do we just find other things to spend our money on?
I think we spread the mayonnaise too thin. We have too much bread and not enough mayonnaise. I'll use higher ed, for instance, on this one. How many satellite campuses does the University of South Carolina need?
I don't know.
I don't either. But they want more. Every year they want more. If those tentacles were drawn back in, they could take the money and repair the existing structures that they have, just using that one agency or that one institution.
Well, with online classes, you shouldn't really have to keep adding. Truthfully, in today's world, the online class market is a very successful model.
You know, that was something else that I brought up over in Lawrence County.
Okay.
I said, you know, if we want to have, the superintendent brought up opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I countered that with, you get less opportunity when you consolidate. You go from five quarterbacks to one quarterback on the football team, from five teams, and five catchers to one catcher. But he said, academic opportunity. I said, okay, let's look at academic opportunity. What do kids today communicate with? What do they learn from?
Mm-hmm.
I've got it right here in front of me. I'm no kid. I've got an iPad and an iPhone.
Yep.
They spend a lot of time on those two things and a PC. And they learn from it.
Well, I think that you actually had brought up last year that you would rather pay one teacher, one professor, more money, a really top-notch fee, and have the classrooms, have them feed back into the classroom with the top-notch teacher, because we were talking about elementary ed, I believe, at that time, or middle school.
That's correct. And it would definitely work on the high school level.
Mm-hmm.
And you need a person to monitor the room. My class, my biology class had 150 people in it. I talked to a couple of folks that went to Clemson, a bigger university, last year, or last week we were talking about this issue, and one of them had 400 students in their biology class. But she said, you know, everybody in that class learned because we had the best.
Right.
They don't put a professor in a class with 400 students if he's an average professor or she's an average professor. They put the best they've got in there.
And I presume they pay them accordingly.
And they pay them accordingly. And if some way you could pick the best biology teacher in the state or the best algebra teacher in the state, and you do it through telecommunication, and those students have a computer right in front of them. it's much easier to go that route. And IT. Every school is screaming for IT upgrades. Mm-hmm. And some don't even have IT infrastructure at this point. It would be cheaper to put those in than build buildings.
So, how's that bill going here this year then? What's going to happen on the school board, on the school bill?
Which one?
About the buildings and everything. Is that just going to get tabled into next year?
I don't see it getting air this year because there's...
Is there an election coming up?
Well, there's too much in front of it.
Right.
But that could be said about most anything in Columbia, Washington, or anywhere else. And there's an election coming up.
Absolutely. But the roads, that's the other elephant in the room. And we have roads that are now falling apart.
Yes, we do.
And, I mean, we've gone beyond just the simple repaving idea. What is the answer there?
Every year that we put it off, we have another $400 million in repair added to the bill.
Right.
As you said, some of them are in total disrepair. You're getting into the base, which means we're not going to be repaving those roads. We're going to be building new ones, which
right.
is much more costly than repaving. What's the answer? I think the roads bill coming out of the House is the answer. I wouldn't be supporting it if I didn't.
Is the aspect? Do we have a gas tax in that one, or is, as our new governor said, that's a last resort?
It is the last resort. Our new governor did say as a last resort. The new governor just came on board a few weeks ago, and this is something the General Assembly's been working on for 4 years. So it is the last resort. We started out with recommendations for a 26-cent gas tax increase.
Mm-hmm.
We are now at a 10-cent over with a phase-in over 10 years, two cents every 2 years for 10 years.
You know, I mean, I hate to say this because I'm not really for spending money and everything, but gosh darn, that seems awful little. It seems like we could have done 2 cents a year or something.
Well... you got to look at the political side of it, too. People, even with that, people are afraid to touch it. There are enough votes in the House to pass the bill at this point.
There are?
Yes, there are.
And what about the fees and everything? They were talking about a fee for electric cars every 2 years. There was an increase for license fees and this type of thing.
Electric cars don't pay anything.
Right.
But the gas tax, if you don't drive, you don't use it.
Right. But electric cars use the roads.
They use the roads.
So fee, there was like a $60 or $120 every 2 years, something like that?
There is. And it captures some of the things like the electric cars that people scream for the future that are the future. I don't see it because technology's not there yet. It's probably another decade away from being cost effective.
And I think the other thing was how much sales tax, I guess, that we pay when you buy a new vehicle. It was capped out at...
It's currently capped at $300.
$300. And they're talking about having it higher based on what it is that you have. Is that still in the budget?
Well, it goes to five. It goes from three to five. I talked to some hardcore conservative folks last week. I was at a table full of folks from mine and your constituency.
Okay.
In Columbia at a dinner. And that was the one area that most of them were very adamant. If you can buy a $100,000 car, you ought to be willing to pay
the tax
on it. If you don't want to pay the tax on it, you should
don't buy the car.
Back up and buy a $20,000 car. And I understand that. The cap was originally put on, and it was to protect people with buying a used car in a lower amount bracket.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wanted to scream, that would be the one to really take a look at. I don't like paying taxes, period.
Correct.
But if I do like driving on roads that don't knock my front end out of line and bend my rims every day.
Now, what is going to be the effect if we don't solve this? I mean, we've talked about it before, but the industry coming into South Carolina has been tremendous over the last few years.
It has. And much of that industry just signed a letter last week supporting this current House bill. And they want the roads fixed.
Sure.
It's costing industry to transport from the upstate the raw materials from the coast to the upstate and then transport the finished goods back to the coast for export. So it's costing their bottom line. It's costing retail business bottom line for damage to vehicles and property and other things as they transport across the state. But I think it hurts us in the economic development side the more our roads deteriorate.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, and people end up paying when you've got a busted tire or your front end's out of alignment or this type of thing. You end up paying for it. You might as well have good roads to ride on and pay a little bit extra at the pump.
Well, and I hear it constantly. People say, you know, as soon as you ride out of South Carolina, you hit good roads in Georgia, you hit good roads in North Carolina.
Right.
And the tax or the fee, however you want to look at it, that is designed to repair roads and match federal funds is the gas tax. And theirs is not just a little
hefty,
higher.
Hefty.
It's much higher than
ours. Or let's use one word, huge.
Huge.
Huge, yes.
The difference is. But the same people that scream at me, no gas tax, are the same ones that scream at me about our roads being in bad shape.
Well, there is only so much money to go around. That, for sure, is one of the things. We only have so much money coming into the coffers.
That's true. Prioritization would help with some of that, and it goes back to what I was talking about earlier. But you've got 170 members of the General Assembly, 46 in the Senate, and 124 in the House, to determine what that priority list is. And there are people, Brian White over in Anderson, and I could sit down, and our priority list would be pretty doggone close.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are people who my priority list and theirs would be polar opposites. So it's a process to work through. But there are things that if you gave me the budget and said cut out enough money in there to fix the roads, I could cut out enough money to fix a lot of things.
But would it hurt all those all the programs or all whatever? Or would they find financing other places?
Some would need to go away.
Okay.
And my priority list of what would go away would be different because I believe in core functions of government. And those core functions have to be paid for. Law enforcement, ambulance service, fire departments, public safety. Public
right.
safety, period, is a core function of state government. Federal government, it's the military and interstate commerce to keep states from fighting at the borders over tariffs and to provide.
But isn't education from kindergarten through high school a core function of our government?
Yes, it is. It's in the Constitution.
Okay.
But there is a disagreement between members of the General Assembly on what defines adequate education. And, you know, and I firmly, personally believe if you can't educate someone that doesn't want to be educated.
That's true.
And if an individual has determined that they are rather be disruptive in a school system, then they don't need to be in the public school system. They need to be in some alternative situation because not only are they not learning, they're keeping other kids from learning.
Sure.
So that's a major disagreement I've had with some folks on the education side. They believe that all kids can be educated. Do I think all can be? Yes. Do I think all will be? No, because they don't want to be.
It's just the way it is. Hey, let's hear a quick word from our sponsors. We'll be right back. Don't you go away.
Gold. gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, and I have Representative Mike Pitts right here with me this afternoon. We're having a great conversation. We're talking about education. We're talking about the roads. We're talking about the pension bill. There are so many things out there. And then, just because I think we need a little levity, what about medical marijuana? I mean, what about that one, Mike?
You know, medical marijuana, if it's passed and it's prescribed and it's used properly, there have been people come before the subcommittees and testify to its usage. And off of that beaten record, I've had police officers come to me and tell me that they personally knew of an individual with cancer. Sometimes it was a relative of theirs
right.
with cancer that were able to eat, were able to avoid the nauseous spells with chemo because they used marijuana. Now, my dad died with leukemia. He went through chemotherapy. And I watched him get more sick with the treatment than he did with the disease. If he would have smoked a joint and it would have kept him from being so nauseous, I would have been on the criminal side because I would have gotten it for him.
But the other side of it is, Mike, is does the medical board actually think it does any good?
That's a debatable issue.
Sure.
And we've had the debate from both sides. People come in and testify on scientific research on both sides of it. My scientific research of it is when I know hardcore cops, street officers that come to me and tell me, I know this individual, I'm related to this individual that smoked it and survived without the after effects of chemotherapy or without the side effects of chemotherapy while going through it, then I don't need scientific studies. If I've got one-on-one analogy or one-on-one science coming at me, that's good enough for me.
Sure. Now, though, I mean, one of the other sides, though, is that going to open the door to South Carolina becoming marijuana-friendly? There you go, marijuana-friendly.
That is one of the biggest fears mm-hmm. of law enforcement. Chief Keel with SLED is a personal friend of mine. He is much like Chief Brooks here in Greenwood.
Mm-hmm.
Those two are solid, solid individuals. They are both by the book. They're both black and white. They're both as solid as you can come. And I have not talked to Chief Brooks about the issue, but I've talked in length with Chief Keel about it. And his fear is the camel's nose under the tent.
Right.
Will it open the door? It's like the hemp bill, this year's hemp bill. Hemp has never...
I didn't know we had a hemp bill in there. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, you might recognize one of the two sponsors on it.
Is it you?
It is.
Okay.
The hemp, and it was to generate the debate. I would really like to see the bill pass because what it does is provides a pilot project through Clemson University to monitor a number of volunteer farmers across the state in all three regions across the state to grow hemp and see if it will become a money producer for them. If it is, it's an alternative crop that can replace the tobacco industry. We also...
Here we go, Mike. Okay. Phones are ringing.
We also have up the road a place called BMW that uses hemp in their vehicles in Europe.
Is that why we have happy people at BMW? It's not the money? I said, is that what?
No, I think it's all about the money.
It's all about the money, Ann, yeah.
Hemp's THC content is so low, it's never been measured high enough. It's never been measured high enough for people to get high on.
Okay, all right.
The lowest that any of the experts were able to produce for us or show us evidence of was 0.07%, and that's not much. It's got to get above a 1% for it to have an effect, or I'm told.
So you're told. Okay. All right. So we've got the roads. We've got the budget here now that has been put out there. This is the first budget draft, I guess, could we say? Is that right?
It is.
What do you think of the budget as far as it stands right now?
It's a pretty lean budget.
Pretty lean budget.
And the reason I say that is it's because annualizations have eaten up most of the revenue, so there's not a lot of new money put into the budget. We took new money, what most people would call surplus, recurring revenue, and put it into pension system. We put it into some more into roads and bridges. That's what we've done the last 2 years, is put general fund money into roads and bridges, and that's why you still don't have as many troopers as you did in 2008, 2009.
Well, I was just looking at, they've put in for a pay raise for juvenile justice officers.
That's correct.
And a $750 pay raise for Department of Corrections officers.
That's correct.
And, but any other raises across the lines of the state?
There were two sections that I know that got raises. One was the correctional officers, like you said, and that was requested at $1,500 across the board. These are the people that are working for about $26,000 a year currently, and in SCDC are keeping the worst of the worst away from you and I at night while we sleep. They're awake on third shift keeping those folks away from us. And they make less than $30,000 a year to do that. I wouldn't do it. I would not work third shift in a prison dealing with the worst of our society and make $26,000 a year to do it. So we put that in there. And the people that work in nursing homes and those areas, we upped that a little bit. I think it was $8 a day, I believe. I don't remember for sure.
Okay.
That's not in my section of the budget, so I'm not as clear on that. But the folks that empty bedpans got a raise.
You know, you've got to give kudos to the people that are out there doing some of these jobs, like our corrections officers and people like that that work so hard. But one of the things that I don't see being addressed very much is the mental health issue of our state. And we've got a lot of problems. I know one of your hot buttons is our veterans and the mental health and the suicides that we've had. And I know that they have worked very hard to try to decrease that. But mental health, where does the state come in as far as mental health doing?
Mental health the two agencies that took the biggest hits during the 08-09 recession was mental health and the Department of Natural Resources. And that tells you where they landed on the prioritization list. Neither one of those was close to the bottom of my prioritization list, because mental health, when it's not funded, affects everybody. It affects law enforcement, it affects the hospitals, it affects our prisons, it affects individual families that have to deal with someone with mental health. So it is a huge issue. And
but they're not really addressing it, are they?
Yes, it's moved forward. It's moved up the scale.
Okay.
And I've got to say that I serve on the agency heads and committee, our which is a joint committee of Senate and House members and appointees by the governor that evaluate and approve agency heads' salary and benefits. And we voted to retain Dr. McGill at Mental Health. He had tarried, finished his tarry, and the commission wanted to hire him back and keep him. And we couldn't find another individual to replace him at his level of experience and with what he's brought to that agency. But are we funding him at a level we should? I don't think so. Personally, no, I do not.
Well, we just don't seem to have the wherewithal to there aren't a lot of places for them to go to get on those that need mental help. We don't have a lot of agencies that are dealing with the mental health issue. And then, of course, you've got the veteran side of it with the issues that they deal with. And as South Carolina being a big veterans and retirement and everything, that's a big issue.
It is a big issue. And I had an experience where I had a family member that had a complete mental breakdown. And I'm a retired police officer. I dealt with a lot of mental patients over the years as a police officer. And you want to talk about frustration. And when it was my wife. When my wife had a mental breakdown, she ended up in Greenwood Hospital. And she didn't recognize me.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what to do.
Right.
I didn't know where to go. And the medical personnel, which at that time self didn't have its mental unit.
Right.
The medical personnel didn't recognize it, didn't know what was going on, and didn't know how to treat her. And so I called Dr. McGill,
mm-hmm.
and Dr. McGill gave me some advice. I found a very good psychiatrist and a very good clinical psychologist, and my wife pulled out of it.
But that's not out there for everybody, is it?
No, it's not.
I mean, you know.
It is not. And what I'm saying there is just the recognition, the stigma in society.
Correct.
Against people with mental health. The insurance equation of...
The lack of... Right.
...coverage for mental health. The medication. There's a variety of things wrong nationwide, not just
Correct.
In South Carolina, with the
it
entire
is.
Mental health picture. And it is nowhere near funded to the level that mental health should be. Because it's like I said, we pay a great deal more over the scope of the entire big picture for mental health issues because it affects so many different things when you have an individual with that doesn't get treatment. You have a Dylan Roof out there when you have mental health issues that are not detected or are detected or reported. And there's no assistance for those individuals. That's a real issue. That becomes a public safety issue, and I think a core function of government.
Well, I think so, and I just it just hurts your heart to see people that just cannot deal with it, and families that try to deal with it and have nowhere to go to try to get some help.
Yes, it does. And where I was headed with, I was a police officer, I would pick people up that had a mental health issue, and I would take them to the hospital and sign them over to the hospital, and I was done.
Right.
So once she was already in the hospital, when they called me and turned me around on a trip to Columbia, I had no idea what to do. I had no idea where to start.
Right.
And but I do now.
Yeah.
And I think God put that on my plate so I would have an empathy for folks dealing with that issue.
It is. It is. My first husband had mental issues, and it was something that really just, I was very young and dealing with this, and it was a big heartache to try to deal with and figure out how to deal with it.
It is. It is. You said it very well. It's heartbreaking.
It is.
And
we deal a lot with those that need help, like Burton Center. There's help there. But this mental health issue is a totally different issue.
It is. And it can be combined.
Can be, yes. But
I'll tell you the part that bothers me the most is when I see people and hear people whining and crying. I can't do this. I can't do that. And then I see people at the Burton Center who are as happy as they can be to be employed doing something.
Exactly.
They earn their respect that way. And that does my heart a world of good. And to hear somebody whine and cry, I have a very low tolerance level for that.
Exactly.
Don't tell me what you can't do.
Okay, I won't. I was hoping for a therapy session, but anyways. But so that's an issue that needs more help. Now, also, the department, Hagel's department, DHEC, is that right? DHEC?
Yeah. DHEC and DHHS both have some issues out there. One of the biggest things that hit us this year that most people don't recognize is the flood and the hurricane. We had devastating effects from the Midlands all the way to the coast from both, and weren't completely over one. We had roads washed out, bridges washed out, farmers wiped out, lost equipment. Small towns on all along the PD and the coast that lost their entire patrol police force patrol cars.
Does the federal government cover a lot of that?
FEMA doesn't cover that.
FEMA
I didn't,
only
I did not know that until
it covers individuals. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just doesn't cover governmental stuff.
It will cover some governmental stuff, but it does not cover something that small as one police car for. Well, one police car town.
Wow.
And we have those. I'll tell you something that is going to affect our area. You mentioned the PTSD issue. Last year at the Hall of Heroes, I promised the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans that were in the audience sitting mm-hmm. together that I was going to do something on the PTSD issue because those kids are killing themselves at 22 a day nationwide.
Yes.
We've had several in our area, the Lawrence, Greenwood, Abbeville area, that have committed suicide coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq. We have currently in the budget a pilot program through Lander University at the Equestrian Center that involves researchers from mental health, researchers from Lander University and a variety of other areas to look at equestrian rehabilitation.
Well, they're finding that works in a lot of different areas.
It works. It's one thing that's working exceptionally well with veterans of the current war. And we are looking at a combination of using canine and horses through the Equestrian Center in a 3-year pilot project to see what the research shows on that. And I think the people that we put in place are going to develop a program that may be the diamond in the nation because of the people that have been put in place.
Well, that's a piece of uplifting news.
It is.
It is good to have some uplifting news, particularly as we're looking over. Now, your session is going to be shorter this year by a month. You believe
that's
that?
That's correct.
You believe that?
I love it.
You believe it?
I do.
You do? Okay.
Let me rephrase that.
Okay.
The House will be shorter by a month.
Well, we can't count on the Senate now. They move at a slower drum, don't they?
They do.
Yeah.
I talked to a couple of senators last week that told me there had been confusion all year long so far over how they're going to deal with those three weeks cut off at the end of the session, or a month cut off the end of the session.
Now, another issue is, of course, the reciprocity agreement on concealed weapons. Has that passed?
It will be debated within the next couple of weeks, probably 3 weeks on the House floor. It's on the contested calendar at this time.
What's your opinion?
I like the idea of national reciprocity. I told Jeff Duncan that was one of the few things that I think the feds could do outside of the 10th Amendment, or that would appear to be somewhat in conflict with the 10th Amendment, that I would support, and that's a national reciprocity bill.
But how do you deal with different states having different requirements for a concealed weapon?
For me, it's simple. If they jump
if you can shoot it, you good. No, okay, go ahead, Mike.
Well, for me, it's simple. It's as simple as if you can legally purchase and possess a firearm, you ought to be able to carry it.
Okay.
Because if you can legally purchase, and possess, it means you're not a felon. It means you passed a background check. It means a lot of things. It means that you haven't been deemed mentally incompetent.
Or deplorable.
Well, I'm deplorable, and I own a lot of firearms.
Okay. Well, when I had Chief Brooks on, he said the thing that bothered him about it, I mean, he likes it fine, is the fact of the amount of training. He's not really wild about how little training people get here in South Carolina, but in some states they don't get any training. They just can go out and purchase.
That's correct.
Right.
And are the good guys. They are the people that jump through whatever hoops their state requires to get a concealed weapons permit.
Right.
Do I think you ought to be trained? I think you ought to be trained if you're going to have a firearm, period.
Correct.
I've been trained as a police officer and a soldier, so I've had extensive training. But I don't see anywhere in that Second Amendment that it says I've got to have
any training.
Training.
I can just have it if I can legally get it, pass the background check or whatever.
Well, again, I told some folks last year during the debate over constitutional carry that if you want to put training into place, go to constitutional training and simply say to purchase a firearm in South Carolina, you've got to display a level of training. They don't bother me because I have the training.
Well, you know, you think about it, though. When kids used to grow up, I mean, they would take their rifles to school. They'd be in the back of their pickup truck. It was a whole different world.
It was a whole different world. Anthony Scalia and I had a conversation about that once at a dinner. He was on the shooting team for his parochial school, and he rode the subway to Anthony Scalia. And he said he had his uniform on and he carried his .22 competition rifle on the subway back then.
Right.
And had no problem. And I said, yeah, I used to go to school at Hickory Tavern and hand my rifle or shotgun to the superintendent. We had a principal and a superintendent when I was in school. We'd hand it to him and he'd lock it in the closet.
Yeah.
We couldn't bring ammunition, but we could bring the gun. He'd go to our friend's house and hunt in the afternoons. And that was not a big thing. Or after we got a little older, you simply left it in the trunk of your car. You didn't have problems. Of course, you didn't have people shooting each other at school back then either.
Yeah, you're listening to WCRS. Interesting conversation about this. One of our talk show hosts was talking about that the national carry type thing. What do you do with different states have different amounts of ammunition that each gun can have and this type of thing? What's legal in one state might not be legal in another state.
If you have, and this is what I told Jeff, Tim Scott and several others, Trey, I've talked to all of them about it. And I said, guys, if you want to do a constitutional carry, national concealed weapons permitting, I'm all for it. And if you do it, I don't care what level of training you require. If you want to require me to take a 40-hour course, I don't care. But that gives me then the ability to have an option. I can get my state permit. I can get my federal permit. If I get a federal permit, then that should be pure Second Amendment. A state should not be able to put a restriction on me on how I carry ammunition. And neither should California be able to tell me I can't carry it in that state if I have a federal commission to carry it, which I do anyway. I'm a retired law enforcement officer, but.
Well, the last topic I wanted to talk about was, I know you have an interest in the South Carolina Conservation Bank, and there's talk about whether it should be still allowed. Is that something that's come up?
Well, there's the reauthorization. It has a 10-year sunset on it.
Uh-huh.
And the reauthorization is what's coming up next year.
So what does that mean, Mike?
It means that the General Assembly has to determine should it be reauthorized or not. If it's not reauthorized, it simply goes away.
And what is the purpose of that?
The purpose of the Conservation Bank in its origin was to conserve natural resources, predominantly waterways, riparian zones along flowing waterways, which are act as a natural buffer or a natural sponge to take contaminants out. And our estuaries on the coast, like the Ace Basin, that's what it was originally designed to protect, is those waterways from development. The big problem, and we just had a legislative audit report come back to us last week, or 2 weeks ago now, that shows several problems within the Conservation Bank. And one is, and this is what I told them last year, you guys have become a rich boys play club. And what did I mean by that? They had become a funding stream for hunting clubs and things like that that are not going to be developed. I had the Conservation Bank. Conservation Bank comes through my subcommittee, my budget subcommittee. And during this year's budget hearing, I asked a question on one particular piece of property that they gave easement on, a $3.5 million easement. It is a 20-member hunt club. That the application fee for that hunt club is over over $100,000.
Wow.
20 members. The application fee is over $100,000. I can't join that hunt club.
Neither can I, Mike.
I can't afford the application fee, much less the membership cost.
Right.
And that's $3.5 million of taxpayer money that was used to do that. I said, so. Was this piece of property in danger of development?
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of humming and hawing, and no. For the next three generations, that property was not in danger of being developed. It had a historical site on it. It has several things, and it has a lot of waterway. But in the priority scheme of things, was it in danger of being developed?
No.
In nobody's foreseeable future, no.
So should the bank be reauthorized?
It should be reauthorized. And it should be reauthorized because it does a lot of good things. It has protected the Ace Basin. It has been used to protect the Ace Basin. It has been used to protect waterways. And waterways like the Saluda and Reedy River, there's conservation easements on those stretches of property that protect the buffer areas. Now, with runoff water coming out of Fountain Inn, Simpsonville, Honey Path, and other areas flowing into those streams, if we have the riparian zone buffer, then we are much better off when the water ends up in Greenwood Lake. So, yes, it should be reauthorized, but it definitely should not be reauthorized in its current form.
Wow. Well, as usual, Mike, you always try to give us the straight shoot on it. Is there anything else you'd like to discuss before I let you go?
No, just simply like to thank you and for giving me an opportunity to talk to constituents, and thank my constituents for seeing fit to send me back down there one more time. I would also like to tell people, many people ask, where do you stand on the tax, on the roads bill? I've been on this issue for over 3 years now, keeping a close eye on it. And I said all along that once it was proven to me what the cost was to repair and justification for those fees, along with reform to keep the same issues from happening of one individual being able to garner a lot of money for his particular area.
Mm-hmm.
Once those safeguards were put in place, then I would be willing to vote for it. Well, I'm at that point. I'm confident that the current gas tax bill in the House will solve those issues. And if the proposed tax will bring in the estimated $1.2 billion a year of new money to put into
the roads
for repair, that would put us on a pace to keep to have our roads and bridges fully repaired in 30 years.
30 years, wow.
Well, what you also have to look at, Ann, is whether or not we have the construction
capabilities
to do all of that. We could shorten that term, but we'd be bringing an awful lot of out-of-state folks in to do the work.
Well, we need to keep South Carolina people working.
That's exactly right. We need a lot of them trained up on how to put down asphalt and pavement and stuff, though.
Okay, well, I guess that comes under education, right? Educational training?
It does.
There you go.
Our tech schools are good at it.
Yes, they are. Well, Mike Pitts, as always, thank you so much for taking some precious time and coming to see us.
It's good to be here, as always.
All right, Gracie, thank you so much for your input there. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.